Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, December the 1st. Very important date, or it could turn out to be a very important day, December the 1st, because there were some arguments before the Supreme Court today regarding the Mississippi 15-week law that was passed, I guess, in the last 12 months by the legislature of Mississippi. It was rejected by some kind of a court. Along the way, the state of Mississippi appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court took the case, and that is where we are now. I have been reading some of the tweets and some of the notes, people on both sides obviously arguing their case. The impression I get is that our side, meaning the side representing Mississippi, or the pro-life side, I should say, seems to be making some pretty good arguments. Of course, you can never tell when you go in front of the Supreme Court. You can really never tell because the questions are not necessarily an indication of how they're going to vote. But, we'll have to wait. A decision or an opinion is likely to be published in the spring. They usually do these things in early June is when these opinions are written. So tonight we're going to be chatting with our friend Michael Vargo. Michael, of course, has been on our show before, and he has his own abortion case that he's working up in Illinois, as you may remember from the last time he was here. His abortion case has to do with father's rights or men, not a woman's body, as is so often the case when we talk abortion. So let me say hello to our friend Michael Vargo up in Chicago. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you so much. Just out of curiosity, what's the weather like up in the Windy City?
Well, it's been unseasonably warm. It's been in the 50s the last couple of days.
Oh, okay. So you're getting a little bit of global warming, whereas other parts there in Lake Michigan and Lake Ontario have been getting a little bit of snow. So I guess everybody in the Midwest is getting a taste of everything. Michael, you've been on the show before, but I always like to have the guests talk a little bit about themselves. So just give us a little update on you and just, how you got here. So if you could just give us a couple of minutes of a quick biography of Michael Vargo, please.
Well, My background has been in writing, and the first book I ever wrote, I started as a senior at Loyola University, and it was on counseling. So that's what kind of leads into this, because these are important philosophical life issues. And then I did a lot of photography and writing over many decades. But recently, as you know, I published 190 articles in American Thinker, and that's where you saw my name.
Right.
You saw what I was doing, and you agreed a lot with that. And that's what started up our conversations. And at about that same time, I started thinking that a lot of these constitutional issues are not being written up properly in the court system. So with all my writing experience, I began writing cases to federal courts, and I've had three cases filed in the Supreme Court, and they're permanently on file. I have two that are now in the district court. One of those two is on the way to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and that's just one step under the Supreme Court. And then the one that's relevant to today is I started writing in March. I had an idea for a new angle on abortion rights, saying that when a woman chooses to have an abortion, that case totally disregards the rights of the man since his DNA is just as important to the life of the child as the woman's DNA.
Right.
And
exactly.
His DNA deserves... His DNA deserves equal protection, and that he should present his side of the argument and show up to protect his interest in the life of the child under the 14th Amendment right to due process. But
right.
I realize I have to compromise. So my solution is going to be that the woman, if she chooses to have an abortion, that I want the Illinois state law regarding abortions to change. Right now in Illinois, if a woman wants an abortion, she doesn't need the permission of her boyfriend or her husband. She can go and just do it, and they actually mm-hmm. destroy the records of it, and the man can never find out. But the problem
right.
is, though, is that the child would not exist without the man's DNA, and he should have a due process right to be involved in this decision somewhere. But
right.
But the decision, my case cannot be that I could that the man can stop an abortion. I have to give in with it as a compromise. But since 52% of all women who get abortions deeply regret it later in their life, you know, my solution is more of a compromise that's both for life and it's for the woman and the man and the baby.
Right.
Because
right.
I say that the woman should be able to contact the man. And she can have second thoughts about it. She can say, well, if you pay the prenatal costs and you pay the birth costs and maybe my lost wages, whatever, then when the baby is born, you assume complete custody and the baby's yours.
Right. And I think this is, you know, perhaps when we talk about the Mississippi case, which is in front of the Supreme Court right now, perhaps whatever they write will have an opening to what you're trying to do in your own case, but I have always over the years felt that there are many problems with abortion. Obviously, the morality of it is always a problem. But when you go beyond the morality and you look at the legality of it, you know, putting the morality on the side and just talking about the legality of it, that I've always felt that abortion assumed or the protection of abortion assumed that the man had nothing to do with it, you know, that the man just simply got the woman pregnant and that was the end of it. Well, I think there's more to it than that. I think in most cases, when there is a pregnancy, it's not because a woman was forced to get pregnant. I mean, there are cases of violent pregnancies, you know, rape obviously is the one that comes to mind, or incest or whatever. But, you know, the statistics that I've seen, Michael, show that, you know, anywhere from over 95%, I mean, let's just say 90%, just to be conservative, 90% of the pregnancies are between two people who just didn't protect themselves, and now she's pregnant, and she does not want the baby, but the man, his point of view is never taken into consideration, Michael.
And neither is her feelings, because if she is a young woman or even in her 30s or early 40s, and she becomes pregnant, she might be horrified. She might be single, thinking, well, I have a stable job, but how am I going to care for this baby? I can't afford it. It's also the woman's feelings and thoughts that are disrespected, because she is never given the option, believe it or not, she is never given the option to contact the man and say, if I have this baby, would you be willing to help support me and take care of it? Although in private life, I'm sure this does happen. She'll tell the guy, and then he may just disappear, so it's
right.
It's his fault too. But the thing of it is, if we write it into law, and if we make a very commonly available to people, if I save one child, to me that's a huge accomplishment.
Right. No, and I think again, I think the point you're making, and it's, I mean, I agree with your thesis, as they like to say, because what you're saying is that a father, a man. Obviously, a man is, let's just say, at least 50% responsible for the life. And a man has every right to say, wait a minute, I want to have something to say on the abortion. I mean, we assume the way that we've talked about abortion in the United States for the last 48 years is that the man just, you know, the man doesn't care about the life. The man doesn't even want to know that the woman is pregnant.
That's wrong.
The man... And I think that's wrong. I mean, you know, I believe that many men would like to know if their baby has been aborted. And then I think if they had the opportunity, I think they would do something about it, Michael.
Well, not only that, but if a guy is married and his wife has an abortion, I know I've heard of cases where the man becomes so upset he divorces her.
Could be. It could be. I haven't heard of that. But I to me, the argument that, in other words, to me, the whole premise of abortion in the United States for the last 48 years or since Roe v. Wade, the whole premise has been it's my body and I can do with it whatever I want.
Well,
not
it's,
really.
It's not just her body, because she would not be pregnant without them. The whole fact, the fact of life is the average woman has 350 or 400 monthly fertility cycles. She can only get pregnant for 100 hours of the month, and that's remarkably constant. From one, we're speaking healthy women. From one woman to the next, that's amazingly constant. Otherwise, if it wasn't, you know, they probably wouldn't be here. They come from mothers who had children. It sounds trivial, but it's actually a fact. So the whole thing is that it's, all of a sudden it's under the total control of the woman. When it's the man who initiates the pregnancy, you know, it's just it just doesn't make any sense. And this whole thing about a 15-week waiting period, 10 weeks, those are all arbitrary, because the Pope John Paul II said we must respect life from the moment of conception. At the moment of conception, a baby has half the DNA from the father and half from the mother, and that starts it. It is a complete human being. It's very trivial to say, well, we can do this and we can do that. And my solution is to allow the woman to have the man to give the man the opportunity to choose to support the child if she figures she can't. And she may even come back later on and have second thoughts. And I would like the Illinois law to change that the woman, it could be open-ended, that if the woman later decides she wants to see her child, it's not like an adoption where they hide it, that she can see her child, and maybe the child would want to live with her after that. Who knows? The whole thing, Silvio, is we're saving a human life.
Right, right. That's exactly right. I mean, we're saving a human life, or at least we're trying to. But to me, again, I go back to my point that the idea that the way that abortion has been defended in the United States for the last 48 years or since Roe v. Wade is that this is 100% a woman's decision, 100% a woman's problem, when in reality, like you indicated, it takes a man to get her pregnant. And even if the man, I mean, if you have a situation where the man gets her pregnant and says, I don't want to hear about it, do whatever the hell you want, okay. I mean, there are men who would say that. Let's be realistic.
Right.
But what if half of the men say, well, no, I don't want the abortion. I want you to have the baby, and then let's find a home for the baby. I think a lot of men, if given that opportunity, would fight for that, Michael, and that's where you're going, and that's why I think it's so important that your case keeps going further up in the federal courts. Let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, Michael, I want to talk a little bit about what's up in Mississippi. I mean, before the Supreme Court, the Mississippi case. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Michael Vargo right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting today with our friend Michael Vargo. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that December 1st may turn out to be a very important date in the story of abortion in the United States. There is a Mississippi law that is before the Supreme Court, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, Michael. But before we get to Mississippi, did you want to say anything else about the case that you are working on? Just any, maybe we left something out, so just go ahead and fill any blank that we may have left out.
Yes, thank you. In my case, I'm arguing that the man has a constitutional right to his DNA deserves the equal protection of the law, and he has the due process right to assert that he has an interest in the life of the child. And what I argue is it doesn't mean the man can become the babysitter. What if he has a sister who has a couple of kids and she wouldn't mind one more? Or his mother, you know, is of an age where she'd love to take care of a grandchild. I would argue that the man should be able to give anyone the child. And it should be immediate and it should be an absolute right. And if the person is unfit, whatever, let a court, you know, like the divorce court, determine later that the person is unfit. But
right.
I can't imagine with the men I've known, I'm sure you'll probably agree, Silvio, if a man really, really wants to have a child, I don't think he'd be an unfit father.
Right. No, I agree. I think that, like we were talking before off the air, but it's a good point that we were making off the air this morning. And that is that I think 95% of the pregnancies in the United States that end up in abortion are not women who are forced to have a baby, not women who are raped, but women who engage in casual or frequent sexual
right.
activity with it could be their boyfriend or just a friend, whatever the situation, and then find out that they're pregnant, and then they don't want to have the baby. And then the man is completely excluded from that decision-making, which I believe to be totally unfair. The man should have a say on it and at the very least say, okay, you can have an abortion. I'll check off on that. I think that should be, like you say, that little creature is at least half his.
Well, not only that, but a lot of girls don't really want to have an abortion. Don't forget, 52% regret it. So
right.
So my argument would help young women. Let's say she's going to college and she, you know, fooling around with a guy on a date, you know, and things get out of hand, or she makes a mistake with her birth control or whatever. It's very hurtful to women too that they have to have abortions, and she
right.
should have the right. And the thing of it is the way the language has become so, you know, spoiled and dark with pregnancy and all this and accusations and throwing things back and forth. I think women would love to have the right to give the child to somebody else.
I think you're right, because
the child's life.
Like you say, what you said about the 52%, I had not heard that number before, but I do know that there are many, many. I mean, if you go around any city, just about every parish, just about every church has a ministry to help women cope with abortions. I mean, our church does, and, you know, most churches do. They have a ministry that works with women who tries to heal women who've had an abortion. And you know, so it is a fact that a lot of women do regret it and have a lot of emotional problems overcoming their decision at one time in their lives to have an abortion. So that is exactly correct. Again, I had not heard that number of 52%, but it sounds to me like a reasonably accurate number given the fact that there are so many, you know, so many ministries in the country of churches working with women who are overcoming their problems with an abortion. Now, let's talk a little bit about what's in the courts today, because that could have an impact on what you're working on as well.
Well,
and I'd like to get your thoughts. But let's just talk about just quickly talk about how we got here with Mississippi. As you know, the state of Texas on September 1st, the governor signed the law became effective. I should say it was signed back in May or June, but it became effective September 1st. And the law in Texas, known as the heartbeat law, simply says.
Right.
That if there is a heartbeat, if the doctor detects a heartbeat, that there cannot be abortion. Now, I always thought that the Texas law was brilliant in this respect, because it was the first time that we were actually talking about the baby. Because up to that
right.
point, you know, the rejection had always been, well, it's a woman's body. She can decide whatever she wants to do with it. But now you have a heartbeat. And all of a sudden, that little baby inside the mom, whether it's 6 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever it is, that baby has a sign of life. And I always thought that was the if I could use the word, the public relations genius of the heartbeat law was for the first time we were actually talking about a baby with a heartbeat, and that changes the conversation totally. Now, that particular law, the Texas law, has been challenged 3 different times and taken twice to the Supreme Court and once here in a federal court, and all 3 times the law has survived and at the moment is the law of Texas. You cannot have an abortion unless there is a heartbeat. So I think that's, you know, a part of it. Now, the Mississippi law comes differently. That comes from their legislature. And I agree with you that 15 weeks is simply an arbitrary number. Other countries have it at 12 weeks. Whatever 12 weeks, 15 weeks, it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, as long as if the court, and this is where I'm going with this, if the court says, okay, a woman has the right to an abortion, but the state has the right to regulate when she has an abortion, I, for one, think, to me, that would be a compromise that everybody can live with, Michael.
Right, but what I like about my case is I give an action that he takes care of the baby. If the woman can't have an abortion when has a heartbeat, then what happens? What's she going to do with the baby from her point of view?
Right. No, I agree with you that you're bringing the man into the picture, but I'm trying to bring abortion back to the states, because I think when you bring it back to the states, see, what I think is going to happen is I think the Supreme Court is going to rule that the states can regulate abortion. I really believe that's where we're going. So
well,
sometime
then my case
in the spring.
Here's the issue. Here's what's different about my case as far as states' rights. I assert that a man has constitutional rights. His DNA deserves the equal protection of the law in the 14th Amendment, and he has a 14th Amendment right to due process. Those
right, but let me finish because I was going to get to that in a minute. What I'm trying to say, let me just finish what I was going to say because I'm going to address your point. No, that's all right. But I'm going to address the point you're making. Once you take abortion, see, the biggest mistake of Roe v. Wade, the biggest mistake was that it basically took the decision to regulate abortion away from the people, and it gave it to an opinion that was written by 9 people, and they're all dead right now. They've not had to deal with the consequences of this because most of them have been dead for 40 years. So if you say, okay, we're gonna take another look at this and we're gonna send it back to the states, then once it's back in the state legislature, Texas or Illinois or whatever, then you're gonna hear men and people like you make that argument, and you're gonna make that argument in the legislature. And my sense is that you're going to see a lot of states accept the idea that you're bringing up, Michael, that a man also has a right or to know what's going on or to take care of the baby. I think once you put it in the state legislatures, I think your case will have a much better chance of surviving than in a Roe v. Wade world, if I could put it that way, Michael.
Well, some of the state laws are the nastiest ones. Illinois has a law that says if a woman can have an abortion and not tell the man. It doesn't even say, which means both single woman and married woman can have an abortion, and the abortion clinic or wherever she gets it must destroy the record of the abortion within 2 years.
Okay.
So that's a real secret abortion, and that's really nasty. Here's the difference, though. Roe v. Wade was not based on the United States Constitution. There's no constitutional right there. There's only a so-called fictitious right to privacy. The word privacy does not exist in the Constitution, and it's only hinted at in the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, that some of your papers and effects can be, you know, against unreasonable searches and seizures. But it doesn't use the word privacy. And the Supreme Court, you ain't going to believe that. There's 2 facts about the Roe v. Wade you're not going to believe. One is that the word privacy does not exist in the United States Constitution. And secondly, the Roe v. Wade case never once mentioned the word father or dad or DNA. It mm-hmm. only, like you said before, earlier on in the conversation, it only talks about the woman and what she wants. It never mentioned
right.
that the father is involved at all, because then, as I write in my notes, if they bring in the father, that changes the whole chessboard. Then he has
no.
Rights,
I agree.
And then,
but
then they can't do it.
Right, and I agree with you 100%. In other words, I think you and I want to go to the same destination. But what I'm trying
course.
To tell you is what I'm trying to say is that I think it's going to be easier to accomplish what you want to accomplish, which is to bring the father
right.
into the conversation in a state legislature, because I think you're going to find a lot more room for that kind of conversation in state legislatures, particularly more conservative state legislatures. I understand, for example, New York has their own Roe v. Wade, basically. So the minute, if the court decides, if the Supreme Court decides that a state can regulate abortion, then I think you'll see unconditional abortion in New York,
right.
in California, maybe Illinois. And that's just the reality of it. I mean, that's what comes with state
that's
rights. It's a two-way street. So you
yeah,
may,
that's why,
for example...
That's why you need,
no,
why
but,
you need a constitutional-based argument.
Right, okay, that's right, that's right. But that, you know, I think that's going to take more time. That's my point. And, you know, and I think, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with where you're going. I'm just trying to
right,
tell
I
you
know.
That I think that the rights of fathers is going to have a much more friendly, you know, a friendly reception, if I could put it that way, if you're having
right.
that debate in Texas or Louisiana or Oklahoma or some of the so-called red states, where I think there is a, you know, where a lot of these anti-abortion legislation is coming from, whether it's Mississippi or Texas or whatever it may be. So, I mean, I like to see us get to the point where fathers are respected, but I'm realistic enough to know that that's not going to happen in New York, probably, and that's not going
right.
to happen in Illinois, probably, in California, probably, or the state of Washington or Oregon. But that's just reality. That, I mean, those are very
right.
radically left legislatures. I mean, and they may very well come back and write a Roe v. Wade, you know, for their states that basically guarantee
but,
abortion, and that's
but
fine.
The thing
we're
is,
not going to be able to stop it, Michael. We're not going to be able to stop that. That's my point.
No, no. But here's the good part about that, though. If a woman does want an abortion, if the abortion is banned in one state, like in Texas or in Mississippi, she can just go to a neighboring state because the law is limited by the boundaries of the state. If the Supreme Court agrees with me, makes it a constitutional issue, the Constitution applies equally to all 50 states.
Right. Right.
So we're going to
that is yeah, but I, no, you're exactly right. You're exactly right about that. But that would have to be the next battle.
Yeah.
I think that this is one of those situations where, you know, you got to win some battles first. And I think from the pro-life perspective, where I'm coming from, I would like to see abortion illegal in the entire country, okay? I would love
but
to see...
But then the government would have to get involved with taking care of the babies.
Okay, I mean, I understand. I understand your point. But what I'm trying to say, from a pro-life perspective, I would like to see abortion illegal everywhere. But from a practical standpoint, I mean, being practical about it, that's probably not going to happen. It would require an amendment, and that would take, what is it? I don't know how many states that would take, but it would take a
two-thirds.
Lot of states. Two-thirds, but that, yeah, that's what?
And many years, and you
and
never
many
get
years,
past
that could
the
take,
real blues.
Right, exactly. So that could be 10 or 15 years, whereas I think a lot of the victories that, you know, that you would like to see and I would like to see with respect to fathers' rights could be won in many states. Again, it's not the perfect situation, but at least you're winning victories and saving lives. I mean, look, I look at Texas right now, Michael. We're running out of time a little bit here, but I just wanted to make this point. You mentioned before about if you could save one baby's life. Well, since September 1st, think of all the baby lives that have been saved in Texas. I mean, probably, I mean, I don't know what the number is, but
yeah,
I wouldn't
lot.
Be surprised. I mean, probably a lot of babies. Yeah, there's a lot of babies who are going to have a shot at life because that law went into effect on September 1st and continues to be the law of the land. So, I mean, the law of Texas.
Remember, my solution and yours also helps women a lot because they won't be undergoing all of that enormous emotional stress and guilt over having had an abortion. So we are actually helping the women as much or more than helping the men.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think one of the biggest lies in that women have been told is the lie of abortion, that abortion somehow fixes a problem, and you know they can sort of abort their problems away. And I have, you know, that's a lie. I mean, it's a total lie. And given the number of women who end up regretting abortions, I think we know what that is. Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much, as always, for your time. We'll check up on all of this. The arguments were today, and I'm sure they'll continue for a few more days. You know, we'll see. I mean, sometimes it's hard to tell from the arguments which way the judges are going to go. But, you know, we're just going to have to wait until they get together. But I do think there is a potential, I think better than 50% chance, that
Roe v. Wade
is overturned. Yeah, I think something has to happen.
Yeah, there needs to be a breakthrough, either in the way you want to see it, or I do, or both.
Right. And my sense is that I think I'll see my breakthrough first before you do, but my breakthrough will open the door, I think, for many legislatures to take your case into consideration. I really do. Because once you're openly debating abortion in a state legislature, on the floor of a state legislature, a lot of things are going to come up, and one of them is fathers. I really believe that. Well, Michael, I want to thank you for – go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Michael.
I was going to say, that's why I want to present my case, file my case in the Supreme Court, because it's actually publishing it, and you would not believe how many people see a case when it's in the Supreme Court. It's much better than a law journal.
I couldn't. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, you've got what you're doing is absolutely wonderful, and I think that having a victory in the Supreme Court, I believe, will get you closer to what you're trying to do by simply allowing the states to regulate abortion. I think that a lot of states will be very open to listen to what you have to say because the argument that you're making about the father makes a lot of sense. And when you start thinking about it, the more people think about it, you know, part of the, if I may just say this real quickly here, I think that part of the problem with abortion is that it was one of those things where they simply said, hey, they would tell men, they would tell people really in general, look, it's not your problem, let the woman decide. It's not your problem, let the woman decide. Well, no, it's a lot more complicated than that. But that's been the way we've been operating for almost 48 years, that only a woman can talk about abortion, or only a woman, and I think you and I know a little bit different than that. Well, Michael, thank you so much. We probably won't do another podcast before the end of the year, so I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year, and we'll reconnect probably after the first of the year when there's more talk about abortion before the Supreme Court, Michael.
Yeah, thank you. And by then I will most likely be done with my abortion case and start that on the road of taking it into federal court.
That would be great. I mean, I think it's absolutely great. I think what you're doing is absolutely, absolutely wonderful. And, I mean, it's just unbelievable the work you've done on this and how well focused you are on this project. Michael, thank you. And thank you very much, and enjoy yourself, the rest of the week and the rest of the year, and we'll reconnect after the first of the year, Michael.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for your time and for working with me, and my best to you and your family.
Thank you so much, Michael. The same to you. Michael Bargo, our good friend up in Illinois, we have chatted with him many times. You know, Michael said something at the beginning of the program that we had met through American Thinker, and that's exactly right. I remember reading something that he wrote about the politics of Chicago at the American Thinker, and that's how I first saw his name. And I contacted American Thinker, and we got together, and we did some programs on that. But lately, he's been focusing a lot on this topic of abortion something that I think is extremely important, extremely important. And I really believe, I'm going to go out on the limb and say that that there's going to be a change. At the very least, I think you'll see the Supreme Court say that states can regulate abortion. And that's a big step forward, considering where we've been for the last 48 years, which is not a good place. And it won't do anything for the 60 million babies who have been aborted, but at least if we can prevent, you know, future babies from being aborted, at least that's a start. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.